Dr. Sadluck?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt?
Yes.
Dr. Rubin? Dr. Rubin? It appears they're waiting on Dr. Rubin. Dr. Sadluck?
All right. Let's give Dr. Rubin maybe another few moments to get back.
Hi, Dr. Rubin. Okay, we have quorum, Dr. Sadluck.
We have quorum, and we have 1:58. So we are going to move on to review and consideration of possible action regarding draft consent agreement for Dr. Teresa Ramsey. Mm-hmm. This is case number 22-211.
Okay.
Gail, just a quick overview, maybe.
Sure. Dr. Sadluck, members of the board, at the meeting of May 12, 2022, the board reviewed case number 22-211, instructing staff to draft a consent agreement in order for discipline regarding the case and to bring back the draft for approval, board approval. The board articulated the findings of facts and conclusions of law portion of the order, and the order has been, that draft has been given to the board members. The board can approve or request changes to be made to the document. Once the board has approved the findings of facts and conclusions of law, the board will need to articulate the order portion.
I do have some things to add to the consent agreement. One would be a couple things. Does the board want to, obviously, this is kind of beyond the letter of concern. So this, how would the board like to have this read? Do you want a consent agreement only, and or a consent agreement with letter of reference?
Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin. Just really quick so I can clarify. As I understood the board's motion at the last meeting, the board's motion was to direct staff to draft findings of fact and conclusions of law consistent with the investigative report and the discussion at the initial interview last week. Gail, along and with my assistants, drafted those findings of fact and conclusions of law in the consent agreement, and that is what is the document that's before you today. So the two things, essentially, there would be two motions today. One would be to adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law in the consent agreement, or subject to any modifications the board feels necessary just to that portion. And once the board has done that, the board can decide on what disciplinary order to put into the consent agreement, because the findings of fact and conclusions of law are just, you know, they established that there was a violation or an act of unprofessional conduct. But it's the board needs to decide, you know, having established a violation, what the disciplinary action to be included in the consent agreement would be. So that would be the second part of today's consideration.
All right. So basically the findings of fact and conclusions of law as outlined by the consent agreement that you presented to us. Would you like a roll call on that portion?
Yes. So the board would need to vote on whether to adopt those findings of fact and conclusions of law as drafted by staff. And the board could make, make any modifications that it sees fit if it would like. And then once the board has finished the voting on that portion and having adopted findings of fact and conclusions of law establishing a violation, then the board can decide on what disciplinary order to include.
Okay. So dealing with findings of fact and conclusions of law, a few items, and then just catch me if I'm going on the wrong track, Mr. Larson, would be, we need at least 8 hours of CME and SOAP.
So that would be the second part, the disciplinary order. I'm just the findings of fact and conclusions of law. Staff drafted those for you. We're just asking you to approve them. You can see in the consent agreement that the order portion is left blank because the board needs to decide on that. But the first part is for the board to adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law portion based on any, or in a, you know, with any modifications that the board would like to make.
Yeah. I'll make a motion that we basically agree with findings of fact and conclusions of law as the board has come up with for that.
Mrs. Dr. Rubin, I second that motion.
Can you do a roll call, please?
Yes,
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
As Mr. Larson was saying, the bottom portion of that, it's up to the board what they'd like to include. I have some ideas. Let me run it by the board members. One would be charting 8 hours of CME. Then there would be patient boundaries and conduct. I'm looking for at least 12 hours with that. And this would be more of Dr. Campbell's alley, would be some type of evaluation, basically a psychological evaluation. And then my last request would be when this physician is seeing somebody, that there be a chaperone in the exam room, and that would be put into the SOAP notes of who the chaperone was.
And Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin again. Sorry to interject. I did just want to note that, you know, that those options that you all that you just listed out are all things that, those are all, you know, potentially non-disciplinary things that the board could do, you know, without, you know. Well, yeah, I mean, a psychological evaluation would technically, you know, those sorts of things are sort of interim investigatory orders, you know, as the board has done in prior cases, that's generally not a disciplinary thing. I mean, usually included as disciplinary actions in the board statutes are, you know, letters of reprimand or, you know, practice restrictions, that sort of thing. But the only point I'm making is that the board could, you know, order continuing education or order that sort of thing without, you know, some sort of consent agreement or something. You could make that order on your own, but that wouldn't require necessarily a consent agreement. The practice chaperone, I think that might go a little bit beyond, but I just wanted to sort of, you know, point out that the consent agreement is drafted to impose some sort of disciplinary action, not sort of like interim non-disciplinary things.
Okay. your thoughts.
Well, what you could do is you could, if you go into a different door for a second, you could impose some type of, you know, like you were saying, I think you said 12 hours regarding, you know, professional physician conduct and interaction and patient relationships, et cetera. And so you could, you know, just an idea that you want to restrict practice until she completes that. You know, or, you know, make her complete that and do a, you know, some type of suspension or whatever for 40, 80 hours, whatever, and then mandate the other training as we usually do. And it's just an idea. That way, you know, that she's completed that professional training before she engages with more patients.
Would you be okay giving her a 30 or 60 day window to get the psychological evaluation done?
Well, I'm not sure that I was thinking that maybe we would hold off on that, I think that has to be done, or that's a more of like what we would do if we wanted to, like if we had more concerns and we weren't ready to impose discipline, that we would want to use that as a tool to figure out what is, you know, what somebody had to say about her. You know, but absent of that, then I think today they want us to just go right into imposing some actual discipline and skip that part.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin. I'm just going to direct the board to the one particular statute that I think is sort of is helpful on this. It's ARS 32-1551, subsection E, and I'm quoting. Quote, if the board finds that it can take rehabilitative or disciplinary action without the presence of the doctor at a formal interview, it may enter into a consent agreement with the doctor to limit or restrict the doctor's practice or to rehabilitate the doctor in order to protect the public and ensure the doctor's ability to safely engage in the practice of naturopathic medicine. The board may also require the doctor to successfully complete a board-approved rehabilitative retraining or assessment program. End quote.
So I think if we identify, you know, a couple of courses respective to our concerns separate from like note notes and everything, which we can give a little bit more time leeway to, you know, and focus on that regard in the consent agreement, and whether or not we're allowing her to see patients until that's complete or not can be a discussion with the board. But, you know, if we can identify a few different courses for her to take and hours that are required, you know, and we can decide whether or not she sees patients or not, limited, et cetera, and then move from there.
Dr. Rubin, your thoughts?
I'm consistent with what you guys have suggested. Dr. Campbell said, I don't have much to add.
Ms. Tibbet?
I don't have anything to add.
Dr. Scott?
Yeah, it's like, no, did the state have any class or course that, that let's say, like, Dr. Ramsey able to take in regard to, you know, behavior modification, anything like that? I'm not sure. Do we have to assign a class, or how is this going to work?
Normally what we'll do, for example, the ADNMA does have a charting class, so that's already there. It's available for the physician. There's other classes that are available that are AMA Category 1 for patient boundaries and conduct. Those are available on Medscape and other stuff. So it's the education is available.
Okay. Well, I agree with you on additional class for behavior, for professional conduct, and also I agree with you on the chaperone. But I just curious how would we be able to enforce that per se regarding the chaperone?
Yeah, and that comes back to you, Mr. Larson. So would we need to actually then go under a different subheading to get this accomplished?
No, I mean, I would direct you to the statute that I just quoted. It authorizes the board to enter into a consent agreement to limit or restrict the doctor's practice or to rehabilitate the doctor in order to protect the public and ensure the doctor's ability to safely engage in the practice. You know, that can include, requirement that she complete some sort of rehabilitative retraining or assessment program, or, you know, limit her practice to a certain extent. You could basically impose a probationary period for, you know, a time for her to complete those things, and state that she, you know, her license is restricted during that time, or, you know, it's really sort of up to the board.
Could that be all under a consent agreement, or do you have to have, now, could you do a letter of concern and have that into the letter of concern? Or do you need a actual reprimand to categorize those under?
No, a letter of concern would be a non-disciplinary letter that just advises the doctor of, that they did not violate the statutes, but, future action consistent with what happened could be disciplinary in the future. It's really just sort of a non-disciplinary advisory letter. I mean, given that the board already directed staff to draft findings of fact and conclusions of law and has, adopted those findings of fact and conclusions of law, the board would, have the ability to impose something beyond that. I thought that, we were sort of past that point already, but
And that's my point. I think we are beyond that point. So I'm just looking from the board and from you on guidance of if we need some of these things done, then which way do we go?
And adding in to some of the requirements that Dr. Fowler has mentioned earlier, I think we'd be good to go on it.
And board members, then, what would you like into the consent agreement / letter of concern? But I thought we'd be on the letter of concern, but are we beyond the level of concern then, Justin, when we attach items like this to it?
Well, I mean, the board could walk it back and, rather than impose, than offer. And remember, this is a consent agreement, so it would still need to be accepted by the doctor in order to be effective. So you wouldn't need to, you would obviate the need for a consent agreement if you were to issue a letter of concern. So you would be essentially walking it back.
Yeah, although we did find, ARS 32, I think it was 15, we did find that was already done, so that's in the consent agreement. So I'm going to make a motion that we go into executive session. So for clarification and legal advice. I'll need a second.
This is Bradley, seconded.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Okay. You like me to take roll? Dr. Sadlick?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt?
Here.
Dr. Rubin?
Here.
We have quorum.
Okay. So where we were is the consent agreement. And that was for ARS 32-1551. We've agreed with that consent agreement. I'll make the motion then for under that consent agreement. And board members, feel free to add or delete from it. For a letter of reprimand, probation for 6 months or as soon as she can accomplish CME. And that would be CME, I'm proposing a SOAP, 8 hours. Patient boundaries and conduct, 12 hours. And this could be either we can add it to the 30 or you can subtract it from the 30. That's my motion. I need to repeat that.
I'm sorry, did you say you wanted to include it with the 30 or have it?
I'm flexible either way. It could be part of the 30. So you've got hours.
No, I know. I mean, you're making the motion. So let's, I would just, choose one and then we can go from there.
I would say that that could be subtracted from her 30.
This is Dr. Rubin. I second that motion.
This book is bad. I don't want anything to add. I agree with the satellite.
This is Dr. Campbell. We could, if we could just add that courses are to be pre-approved by board staff, and that I, and just to clarify that she's on 6 months of probation, period, end of story, and that these particular two courses that were requiring her to take need to be completed within, let's say, 45 days, and and regarding the overall letter of reprimand to be included with the consent agreement, that if it's not accepted within 30 days, we'll move forward to formal interview.
Correct.
Does he need to restart?
Does board staff on board with that? Do you guys get all that?
I would just ask Dr. Sadlick, do you agree to include those amendments to your motion?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Any further discussion? Would you like me to take roll?
Yes, please.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
I'm abstaining. I wasn't present at the last board meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Let's move on to number 7, review consideration of possible action regarding request for probation termination. This is Stephanie Bailey, and I don't have the case number in front of me.
And Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this was tabled from last month because we ran out of time. But this is regarding Dr. Stephanie Bailey. On 10-8 of 2020, Dr. Stephanie Bailey entered into a consent agreement with the board relating to case number 20-152. At the meeting of May 13th, 2021, Dr. Bailey presented for the required follow-up. The board accepted her compliance with the order at that point and took no further action. Dr. Bailey has remained in compliance with the order and is presented to request a release of probation. Staff recommends release of probation.
Is Dr. Bailey present?
Yes, I am. This is Holly Diesel, her attorney. Thank you.
Hi, Holly.
Hi.
And Dr. Bailey, everything's going well for you?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Are you still up in Sedona?
I am, yep.
Okay. Practice is going well and everything else?
Yep, it definitely is. I have also been in contact with Holly Diesel about how there have been no charges or anything that have come forward from the initial in May of 2020.
Okay. So there's nothing pending with EPS and the other agencies?
No.
I make a motion that her probation be terminated.
Dr. Campbell will
say. Dr. Rubin will recuse.
And I guess roll call, Gail.
And excuse me, Dr. Rubin, and you're recusing because you were not part of the original case? I don't remember. I'm sorry.
This is Dr. Rubin. I recuse because I have recused from other cases.
The other portion.
From the other portion.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Thank you. And Dr. Sadlick?
Yeah, I made the motion that we terminate.
Right. Did you want me to take roll?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
And Dr. Rubin is recused. Motion carries.
brings us to number 8, and I've read through that. Is Darren available? Is Darren online?
Yes, that's 7.
Could you give us a quick run through? Since you're the one that sent
it. I sure can.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure will. And I've got I think an amendment that I'll probably propose. And Gail and Jeff, if you wouldn't mind, simply because I'm going to ask you to take a look at it in a little bit, pull up the rules, R4-18-205, the continuing education requirement. Dr. Sedlak and members of the board, this is Baron Glasgow, executive director of the Arizona Naturopathic Medical Association. Because it's relevant to the discussion, I also wanted to note that I'm executive director also of 4 other state naturopathic associations and 1 national association, the Psychiatric Association of Naturopathic Physicians, also known as PsychAMP. Shannon Braden, who's a naturopathic doctor, who is executive director of the Federation of Naturopathic Medicine Regulatory Authorities, will hopefully be joining this discussion as well. The AZNMA officially asked the board, as you go through your rule changes, to add the North American Naturopathic Continuing Education Accreditation Council, or NANCIAC, to the list of organizations that are approved for CEs for license renewal. Currently, as you know, NDs can use CEs provided or approved by the ANP or any of their what are called constituent organizations, the AZNMA, or any other naturopathic licensing authority in the U.S. or Canada. We believe that NANCIAC should be on that list of approved organizations. We think that the way to judge that is whether an organization is credible and if they've established a rigorous CE process. And in my opinion, NANCIAC has met both of those standards. NANCIAC was created by the Federation of Naturopathic Medical Regulatory Authorities due to requests from naturopathic regulatory authorities. NANCIAC was developed to ensure the CE providers develop or deliver high-quality naturopathic CE requirements that are free from commercial bias. NANCIAC was developed by licensed NDs with the input and help from state and provincial naturopathic regulators. NANCIAC applications are reviewed by licensed and or registered naturopathic physicians. And the board of directors of the Federation, which is composed of past and current ND regulators, make the final decision on accreditation. The NANCIAC itself doesn't approve CEs, which is why we need to have the conversation about the language. Rather, it accredits CE providers. The application, which is really rigorous, and I know that because I'm currently going through it on behalf of PsychAMP, is extraordinarily comprehensive. I believe that by the time we finish our PsychAMP accreditation application, which is going to be complete, I believe, next week, it'll probably approach 100 pages in length, which includes all of the required documentation. And that process has really forced the organization to assess its policies and procedures and make improvements to meet the real high standards that NANCIAC has required. NANCIAC accredited CEs are already accepted by California, Oregon, and Washington, the 3 other largest naturopathic licensing authorities in the U.S. So if we could talk very quickly about the specific language and the rules. I'm not certain, and Jeff and Gail, this is really for you, whether adding NANCIAC to the list after ANP, AZNMA, or licensing authorities is the right way to go, or if we should adopt language like is in 205B1, such as where it lists category 1, perhaps it should say education provided by an organization accredited by NANCIAC. We know that language needs to be precise, and I think that might be the more precise way to go. So with that, if Dr. Braden is on and has any other comments or wants to correct anything I may have misstated, I would certainly welcome that.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, hi, Dr. Braden.
Hello, thank you. Yes, my name is Shannon Braden. I'm the executive director of the Federation of Naturopathic Medicine Regulatory Authorities. And I believe that Baron has done an excellent job in summarizing NANSIAC. The only thing I would add that makes NANSIAC particularly different than any other approval process that's taking place for naturopathic CE currently is that NANSIAC accredited companion education activities, CE activities, have to fill a practice gap. Now, this is changing and elevating naturopathic CE activities to more closely align with industry standards. In the continuing education industry, there are requirements to do needs assessments, which means you have to assess the needs where are gaps in your participants and create learning objectives and CE activities that fill those practice gaps. Now, naturopathic regulators like yourself know that continuing education, we don't do it just to check a box. We do it so that we improve the performance of the licensees and improve public protection. And the way you do this is by filling practice gaps. So NANSIAC accredited providers are creating educational activities that fill practice gaps, are free from bias, free from commercial bias, and disclose all potential conflicts of interest. These are three elements that are not in any other approval process for naturopathic CE. And I'm absolutely open to answering any questions you might have.
What would the main difference be between this and, let's say, AMA Category 1, et cetera?
There are essentially no differences other than commercial entities who do AMA Category 1 have slightly more stringent requirements at the, at the organizational level. They have a lot of requirements about how you have to create a separate company if you want to do continuing education. NANSIAC at this point does not require that, but there is a much higher burden of reporting required of commercial entities that want to become NANSIAC accredited. At this point in time, no commercial entities are accredited with NANSIAC.
Okay. And then if the long-term goal with NANSIAC would be, are you trying to make it more so that the other medical community can see this as more of a validity, et cetera, of the profession?
I would call that more of a side effect than a goal. Truly, the goal of NANSIAC is that naturopathic regulators want to be able to see continuing education filling practice gaps, being free of commercial bias, and disclosing all potential conflicts of interest. So the goal is to elevate the standards of naturopathic continuing education.
Okay. So, for example, AAMP and some of those conferences, they would run that through NANSIAC.
It wouldn't be the AAMP because they approve their own activities.
Right.
But, for example, one of our more recent accredited providers is NAPCP, the National Association of Naturopathic Primary Care Providers.
Okay.
And so they have a conference, I think, two or three times a year. And, yes, they have to provide us with reporting and information on their CE activities before as well as after the activity to prove that they are adhering to the standards of NAMCS.
Is there a fee that they paid NAMCS then for the
yes.
overview? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I think it's a good idea. I don't have any other questions, but let's see what the board members, everyone thinks about it. Dr. Rubin.
Where's your location located? Where exactly are you located? The NAMCS.
NAMCS is a service that is provided by the Federation. The Federation is incorporated in the state of Oregon.
Okay. So let's say if I want to present a subject to a naturopathic for a CME credit, do I just send you the subject and the topic and the topic and subject to get it approved through you, or do we have to, what step are we going through? Is it the same like the EZNMA, or what are we talking about?
No. So NAMCS is an accrediting council. So accreditation is a process by which a CE provider has to demonstrate they can follow all of the NAMCS standards. And hopefully you have been given materials on the NAMCS fact sheet and the 10 standards of NAMCS. And if not, I can talk you through those, but I would refer you to that material to look at the standards. The standards were developed by looking at the ACCME, the ACPE, which is the Pharmacy Accreditation Council, the Nursing Accreditation Council, and the Canadian Healthcare Provider Council. It's called the CCCC. So we took a look at all the standards of the different accredited organizations for primary care providers, and we took those and then rearranged them and adapted them to specifically be about naturopathic medicine. So a CE provider, if they want to become accredited, they have to go through the accreditation process, which is, like Baron mentioned, a very long application where you give us a bunch of documents proving that you can adhere to NAMCS standards. That application is reviewed by 3 licensed naturopathic physicians. Our recommendations are taken back to the Board of Federation. The Federation Board is made up of current and past regulators. At this point, they're all current regulators. And we review the recommendations in an objective fashion to decide if the CE provider has given us sufficient proof that they can follow NAMCS standards. If they have, they become accredited. Once you become accredited, you have reporting requirements to make sure that you can maintain your accreditation. And those requirements, the required reporting, there's a form before and a form after each live event or each continuous event. Continuous being online, available in any time on demand kind of event. That reporting form asks for needs assessment, practice gaps, learning objectives, how you're going to evaluate the participants, and then including a bunch of other financial disclosure statements that are signed by all the presenters and developers. And this is all kept on file with NAMCS office. The post-reporting form follows up on all of the information, but most particularly, did the participant meet the learning objective? NAMCS wants to know that the participants, when they fill out their evaluation, that they feel that the CE activity has met the learning objective. And if it hasn't, then we start to give feedback to the CE provider because that's falling short of the NAMCS standard. So the reporting forms help NAMCS monitor the adherence to the NAMCS standard. Did I answer your question?
Okay, thank you.
other questions, board member comments?
This is Dan Rubin. It sounds amazing. Well, especially given the timing, because it seems like more and more academic institutions, or if you will, are having sponsorship by brands, and there's sort of this gray zone merger, and you see things being branded, and this is taking a step in the right direction and having everything free from commercial bias. We just had our national ANP conference virtually this past weekend, and if you ask me, there were some gray zones, and I'm going to suggest, for instance, that Corey, the executive director of ANP, reach out to you guys if she hasn't, but I'm all in favor. I think this is timely and really just sets the bar high, and I like it.
Well, thank you for those kind words. We're really trying to elevate the naturopathic CE that's available.
Anyone else have comments? So, Baron, how would you like us to proceed from this point?
If I could get Gail and Jeff's guidance, or if we could, regarding how the language should be phrased, I think that would be helpful.
Okay, so do you want to then set up a time with Jason?
Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, I think that the board can just instruct me, since we're going through a rules revision anyway, to include this within the rules. The rules package itself needs to come back to the board for final approval before we move anything further. So if you just instruct me today to include this in the rules revision, I can do that. I can have a discussion with Baron. We can decide on, you know, maybe some draft or preliminary language. It's not necessarily set in stone. The board would have the final say in the matter.
I think that would make the most sense.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Gail.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certain it's available for any questions or if you need any additional information. Thank you for your time today.
Okay. Gail, do we need to make a motion on that to allow yourself and Justin
to
get back to that, or what would be the best way to wrap this one up?
I mean, unless there are any objections from the board members, I think, you know, it's clear that you sort of instructed board staff to include this in the rules package. And again, the board will need to, you know, vote to accept that rules package at the end of the day. So I don't know that I don't think you necessarily need a motion at this point, since, you know, anything that is added to the rules package would be ultimately, you know, voted on by the board.
Thank you for presenting it, Baron, and we appreciate it, and they'll be getting in touch with you.
Great. Thank you for the time.
Thanks.
And Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, I think Baron has one more item with us today, number nine,
that was, and since you're still on the line, Baron, can you go over that with us?
Absolutely, and I'll be very brief on this one. Back at your April meeting, you, Dr. Sadlick, suggested that the AZNMA may want to work on the minor surgery issue. Unfortunately, we did not have a meeting that month, a board meeting that month, and so we had a board meeting a couple of weeks ago, and the AZNMA board unanimously approved formation of a minor surgery task force. Dr. Stephen Katz, who is our immediate past president, will be chairing that task force. We'll be putting it together in the very near future. I would like to add that we received a copy of a letter that I'm certain you've seen that was co-signed by the president of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons and the president of the Arizona Society of Plastic Surgeons with the subject recent actions of naturopaths in Arizona. Our board of directors has received a copy of, that letter. Unfortunately, the letter was addressed to the president of the Arizona Senate and the speaker of the Arizona House. Sadly, in our estimation, it was a political letter, and it was not based in fact. It was based in a prejudiced view of naturopathic medicine and naturopathic physicians. I might cite from the language in the letter that specifically says, quote, "Naturopaths are not physicians. The education and training of a naturopath is in no way comparable to that of an advanced practice nurse, let alone a medical doctor." And it goes on from there. Nowhere in this letter does it acknowledge the 87-year history of licensure in Arizona of naturopathic physicians. Doesn't even refer to an ND as a physician or a doctor. It refers throughout as a naturopath. So we are developing a strong response to this letter, and we will provide a copy to you of that letter so you can review it should you like to. So that's the current status. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
This is Dr. Ruben Barron. Thank you for that presentation. Yeah, I probably would have disrespectfully not accepted this letter nor recognized it since it was a false letter. Glad that you're responding and wondering if you're going to school them on the difference between a naturopath and a naturopathic physician.
That is certainly going to be part of our response. We are also going to perhaps be seeking legal advice, in the realm of slander. And so we really want to make sure that they know that, this is not acceptable. And, you know, it might be David fighting Goliath, but frankly, we deserve better than this.
Absolutely. Thank you. Do love the idea. Yeah, that is, or, yep. Thanks. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Sharon, I want to thank you. I did read that, reviewed it actually twice, and thank you for taking an aggressive stance.
You bet.
Hopefully you get the monitoring committee put together, and we can move forward here.
Absolutely. And I will report back to you. Gail and I will stay in touch and I'll provide reports as we can.
Thank you. And thank you for taking charge of it. I appreciate it.
You bet. Let me, before I leave, I just would really like to thank Gail for the wonderful working relationship that she and the association have. She's a real treasure for your board, and I'm just grateful to her.
Oh, you're here.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Cheers. No, that's great. Thank you. And Gail, thank you for working with them too. We can get this to happen and maybe make some more clarification. All right. Anything else on with number nine? And move on to Executive Director report. That would be Gail.
And Dr. Salek, members of the board, this is the report that was on the agenda last month. Unfortunately, we had to table it due to time. But I did bring it back before you this month. Just pointing out that one of the cases was dismissed by the executive director, Dr. Gilbert Leone. And did anybody have any questions relating to anything on the report? Keep in mind that these numbers are from last month, not this month.
Well, does that mean we have a lot more people that we licensed since last month?
We probably have a few more.
Okay.
Gail, do you know offhand what the actual licensure is at this point? Just roughly?
I would say it's very close to this. I think we just licensed a couple of folks. So I don't think it's a lot more than the 1147, might be 1150.
Yeah. Okay. Anything with budget?
No, I mean the budget numbers. Yeah, we're coming up on the end of fiscal, and I didn't get the numbers from CSB yet this month, so that'll be reported next month.
And how about board cases under investigation?
And so there's two here that should be on. It says on June. We had one on June. And I just got two more, and I'm sorry, off the top of my head, I don't recall. I believe they're both standard of care, and we just received those. So those cases have just been opened. So I'm hoping to get, if not all of them, at least a couple of them on the agenda for July.
Pending legislation, anything there?
I've been trying to keep track of that. I haven't seen anything specifically related to us come across being signed by the governor. Again, I will put that, if there is something, I will put that on next month's ED report.
And then you already went over cases dismissed by executive director. That would roll us to number 11, which would be future agenda items. Does any board member have anything they want to include in the agenda?
Yes. So what happened with that CME 20 units per year? What do we need to do next? I know that we agreed to it, but is that something that we need to do with that?
Dr. Spat, I'm sorry. I'm not understanding your question.
Oh, you know, 2 months ago, we were talking about reducing the CME requirement.
I get it. Yeah. So I believe the board directed me to go ahead and do that. So that's going to be part of the rules revision that we talked about earlier.
Okay.
So that would ultimately...
Anything that we need to do, though, to help you to facilitate moving that forward, anything like that?
No. So ultimately, I'm going to make the final sort of draft, if you will, and then I have to get approval from the governor's office to actually run the rules package. And then we kind of go from there. It's a little bit of a process.
Okay. I'm just curious, is this going to happen like this year, or do we have to wait until next year? I'm just curious.
I don't think it would be in play for this year coming up. Yeah, we are still as the statute and the rules are written for 30 hours. Yeah.
Okay, I just want to confirm that. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just real quick, I know that we're at the end here. I don't know if the other members know, but I also serve on the board of technical registration, for engineers, architects, land surveyors, home inspectors, alarm installers, and geologists. So what happens there is the board for investigations, like for instance, when Gail, so much time working hard and doing her investigations, that board actually charges for the cost of the investigation on any case where somebody is, found at fault. Is that something that we don't do because it's the medical profession, or is that just something we've just never really taken up? Or I just thought it was, I'm not suggesting that we do it, but I was, I guess maybe they have a humongous staff there and maybe they need to compensate for that effort. I don't know. Just talking out loud here. Any thoughts on that, Gail?
Yeah. And so, Dr. Campbell, members of the board, I believe there's two things. So our board in statute allows us to fine a physician civilly. So in the course of handing out disciplinary action, the board can also fine the physician. That's a civil penalty. It doesn't go to our board. It goes directly to, I believe the whole thing goes to the governor's office. The other thing I think you may be thinking of is in terms of a formal hearing, and Justin's going to correct me if I'm wrong, But I think if we take something to formal hearing and we win and the respondent loses, we do have the ability to bill that respondent for that fee. The problem with that is what we found is basically at that point, we're taking the license away, right? So you typically don't go to formal hearing for lesser things. So if you're taking the physician's license, they really don't have any incentive to pay us a fee, even if we require them to. And I'm not sure what we can do in that case.
Mr. Chair, members, Dr. Campbell, this is, it really comes down to the, you know, the differences in the organic statutes of each board. Some licensing and regulatory boards do have statutes that authorize them to assess administrative or investigative costs in a broader sense, you know, like all costs of using an investigator, that sort of thing. Our board statutes, the naturopathic board statutes, don't have, you know, a broad assessment of administrative cost provision. They do have a provision, as Gail said, that the board may charge costs of formal hearings to the licensee. If, you know, if the board sends a formal hearing case to OA, there are, you know, costs associated with that. And if the board, you know, prevails and, you know, the person is found to be in violation, then the board may, you know, as part of its remedy, you know, assess against the person the cost of the formal hearing. But there's no similar provision when it comes to like investigative costs and that sort of thing. There are a couple, you know, very specific ones when it comes to, you know, like locating a person or something like that. But there's nothing, you know, there's nothing like the technical registration board who, you know, has a specific statutory authorization to do that.
Very good. Thanks. Great education. I appreciate that. I was just curious. Appreciate it.
No, and you know, and just for the record, I mean, as somebody who I represent, you know, multiple different boards, you know, most of which are healthcare regulatory boards like ours. I represent one that is not a healthcare regulatory board. And, it is very interesting to see the differences in all of the different board statutes. You know, they all are set up in very different ways. And so, you know, you raise a valid question. But yeah, it is very, you know, if you know, since you do serve on both boards, you'll probably notice as you go further that there are all sorts of distinctions.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell.
Thank you, guys.
And we'll move on to call to the public. Anyone that needs to speak to the board? And we'll count to five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Call to the public is done. And next is adjournment. Thank you, everybody, for hanging in there. I appreciate it.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. See ya.
All right. Cool.